Hello and welcome to Series 5, Episode 3 of Out with Susie Ruffle. Hello. I hope that you are having a good week wherever you are. I am in London, as I normally am, and I've been really enjoying the fact that the weather is getting nicer. I was out in the park earlier this morning and it was simply glorious. So more of those days, please, if anyone that's listening has any sort of control over the weather, I'd really appreciate that. As ever, I've got a fantastic conversation to share with you today with the brilliant Nathan Fode. I love him. If you're not aware of him, I think you might be about to fall in love with him too. I think he is so brilliant and I think the work that he creates is so exciting. He's a writer and a performer and an actor and I just think he's great. His new show, Newark Newark, is brilliant. We talk a lot about that and a lot about the other acting jobs that he's got coming up. So I think you'll really enjoy it. I just loved chatting to him. As ever, I've got some... Oh, my cat's just walked in. Now, on another podcast, I might think, oh no, I'm going to cut it. But I feel like maybe the listeners of this podcast won't mind too much. Velma, are you going to be quiet or can I finish this bit? Okay, I'm going to have to put her out. One sec. Sorry about that. What was I saying? Oh yes, I was saying, as ever, I've got some fantastic listener emails to share with you. And we've been receiving gorgeous messages at the beginning of the series, like we always do. The email is hello@outwithsusieruffle.com. Please do get in touch with me. I'm also on Instagram. And I am on Twitter, but I don't really like Twitter. So I'm not on there very much. When I say probably, I know that I'm not on there very much. So if you want to get in touch with me, the email is the best. As I said, it's hello@outwithsusieruffle.com. Okay, before we get to Nathan's fantastic conversation, let's share a couple of emails. Hey, Susie. Been a huge fan of the podcast from the start and love to listen every week. I identify pretty discreetly as non-binary. When I say discreetly, I mean I've never come out, and not in the way that people might assume, but merely because I've never felt the need to. Not that it's something that I hide. I love to talk about it when it comes up naturally in conversation. My gender identity at this point in my life is so non-specific that I've never been bothered by being called a certain pronoun or addressed as a certain gender. I feel this inhabitance of the term non-binary is one that is not placed on a platform and people always seem to be interested when I talk about my gender identity. I feel my own identity of not belonging to a singular binary, male or female, but instead almost feeling part of both at once. This is not an angle of the non-binary experience that gets a lot of attention or focus in the more general conversations of non-binary existence. I often feel alone in this and would love to share the hope that someone else may feel comforted and validated by my same feelings. I love talking about gender identity and exploration of my own identity is something that brings me so much joy. I'm lucky that the nature of my identity means that gender euphoria is far more common than dysphoria, making exploration of my own gender so much fun. I think talking about this joy is so important at a point in time where the conversations relating to the same subject are almost always focused on negativity and struggles. Anyway, I hope this makes sense and I would love you to share it. And that is from Art Student G. And they have also given me some suggestions, which I will take on board and I'll see what I can do. Thank you so much for your message. I really appreciate it. And I think that's a wonderful thing to share. That gender euphoria is happening to you a lot more than gender dysphoria. And I hope that I'll be able to encourage more people to come on the podcast that share those feelings. Okay, let's have another one. Dear Susie, your podcast was introduced to me 7 months ago by my girlfriend. She is such a big gay, and after only fairly recently coming out, she has been absorbing all the queer culture she can, including your entire back catalogue. I am now a converted fan, starting with the people I know and then backtracking to those I don't. I've found the stories heartwarming, funny, and informative, and it is incredible to know that there are people out there that share my story. However, this story is not about me. Unfortunately, my girlfriend and I have recently made the difficult decision to part ways. I say part ways, in true lesbian tradition, we are continuing to live together as we have a wonderful house by the sea, and neither of us are inclined to leave. I also think that it will work. We have such respect and care for each other that I cannot see that fading. Plus, we both haven't finished watching The L Word together yet. What has pulled us apart is not a lack of love, but life circumstances that we aren't able to work right now. Life works in mysterious ways, but I know deep down, in my soul, that we are supposed to be connected. I wanted to write to you because she's not doing so well at the moment and I wanted her to know that she's not alone. Not just because I am here, but because she is connected to this amazing community that you have created here with your wonderful podcast and the wider LGBTQIA+ world. I think your discussions have been crucial in her evolution to the wonderful, strong, amazing woman that she is. Living in the world as queer people, we have an extra layer of stress to work through, and she manages that on top of everything else. She really is a Wonder Woman, even if she doesn't feel it. Maybe if she hears it from you, she might believe it. Thank you for all you do. Best wishes. And that's from Amy. First off, Amy, thank you so much for your message. I'm so pleased that you got in touch, and I'm delighted that you are now a converted fan. I really appreciate the kind things that you said about the show, and I am sending so much love to your ex-partner, friend, whose name you haven't given, but I hope that you and her continue to enjoy your life by the seaside together in whatever way works for you. Okay, let's get on to today's conversation. As I mentioned before, it's the brilliant Nathan Fode, and I really hope you enjoy it. I am so delighted to welcome Nathan Fode to Out today. If this is your first introduction to him, get ready to love him. A writer, an actor, and one of my favourite people on the internet. His brand new show, Newark Newark, comes to UK Gold and Now TV this spring. It's a semi-biographical sitcom about a teen boy coming to terms with who he is in the town of Newark and finding his way in his slightly unconventional family. It's very funny. I loved it. I highly recommend it. It also stars Morgana Robinson and Matt Horn. You must see it. And he's also in the soon-to-be-released HBO Max pirate comedy Our Flag Means Death, starring Rory Kinnear. Or you might have seen him in Sky series Bloods with Jane Horrocks. I mean, basically, he's rubbing shoulders with people that we want to be friends with constantly. As the listeners know, sometimes I just interview people who I really want to become friends with, and this is exactly what's happening today. I think he's so funny, I think he's so brilliant, and I think it's a joy to have him on the show. Welcome, Nathan.
Susie Ruffle, my God, what a nice intro. That was beautiful. Thank
well,
you.
Listen, it's all true.
Oh, hey.
I mean, one of your Twitter videos sort of did the rounds on my friendship WhatsApp groups. We're like, who is this guy and why is he funnier than all of us?
Oh, come on.
And we're all stand-ups. We must find him and kill him.
And you did, and that's how the podcast is going to end.
Yeah. So Nathan's a ghost. I should mention that at the top. But how are you?
I'm really great, actually. I'm feeling good. I feel like the weather's getting nicer. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I feel kind of happier. Yeah, I'm great. How the hell are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I mean, we're in person. So we did like two in person and then we all know what happened. Mm. So this is my first one back. So I'm very excited to see you.
Oh my God, you too, mate. And it is so nice to like, I feel like I've done a couple of podcasts over Zoom and it's always kind of fine. You know, you can make it work, but it's just so much nicer to do it in person.
It's really nice to meet people face to face.
Yeah, right?
Absolutely. So it feels like you're having... Like, normally we go through the show sort of chronologically of people's lives, but let's just talk about, like, the now. It feels like you're having a real moment. Does it feel like you're having a moment?
Oh, wow. Yes, I suppose. Yeah, the non-humble answer is, like, yes, I had, like, a great year, and it feels, as I was saying to you before we started, like, I did a bunch of stuff that is just about to come out. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, probably... Hi to people who don't know who the hell I am. but yeah, I did the HBO show and obviously my show Newark, Newark, which I'm so proud of. It's all about to come out. So it feels like, yeah, I'm in the middle of something cool. And I mean, you must know, you must have had a time where you were like, oh, sure, this feels good. And like I'm moving on up and I'm finally getting to the place that I've wanted to be for so long. And
because you've been writing for a while.
Because
In doing sort of my internet deep dive on you, I read some of your blogs.
Oh, you did?
Which are really funny.
Oh, thanks.
Really funny. All the stuff about temping.
Oh, yeah.
Just really enjoyable stuff. I don't know what you said about, there was something about how you couldn't stop sweating or something to do with sweat.
That was a
sweaty summer. Ah, mm-hmm. We've all had that.
Yeah.
We know her.
Oh my God, we know her. We love her. I'm so glad you read that. I forgot about those blogs, actually. I used to write them on my WordPress when I was just like, I had nothing to do. It was like when I felt like I needed a creative outlet. And you know, it's so hard when you're like a comedian or a writer or whatever, and it's hard to... When you're making stuff and you sort of feel like everything you're doing is to try and make money or, you know, further your career, and those blogs were just like a pure source of like, I wasn't writing them for anything. It wasn't because I was hoping they'd get picked up to turn into a TV show or whatever. It was just like a pure expression of just what I was like feeling at the time. They're so silly, but
they're really funny.
Oh,
they're
thanks.
Really, really funny. I highly recommend. If you just Google Nathan Fode and then have a look, it'll really make you laugh.
Oh,
I think it'll really make
God.
You laugh. So Newark is sort of semi-biographical, is that right?
For sure, that's how I describe it, yeah. There are certain, like, threads in the show. It's just like a half-hour sitcom, but there are certain, like, threads in it that are extremely autobiographical, and then I've kind of gone off because, you know, one's own life isn't normally interesting enough to just, like, directly translate into, like, comedy, so...
Mom, do you remember exactly what you said there?
Yeah, exactly. Right, yeah. And I keep having to explain to my family, I'm like, just so you know, like, not everyone, like, my dad is nothing like the dad in the show,
right.
Like, and I've had to make that very clear to him, so he's not devastated when he watches it, because he's not, like, sympathetic.
I haven't got a ponytail.
Or has greasy he? Ponytail. No, he doesn't, he's balls of coot. But yeah, so I took certain threads from my life that I felt were, like, interesting or funny and used those, and then I fictionalized, like, a lot of it. Like, my family, like, Leslie, which is the name of the young boy in the show, he, like, our family setups are actually very different. Like, my parents are still together, mm-hmm. and I have, like, brothers and stuff like that, but... Yeah, the kind of core of it, of that, like, main story between Morgana's character and Jai's character, is pretty
the mother and son.
The mother and son, mummy and son, yeah.
Which is really beautiful.
Thanks, mate. It's really lovely. So, I've not had a lot of, like, feedback on the show apart from just all of us working on it, watching it. And I got, you know, you get to the point with something where you're like, I think it's good. I really like it. I'm really proud of it, you know, and I just now we just have to wait to see what people think. But I had the time of my life doing it.
That's so great. Oh. It's so nice. It's so great to hear when people have those experiences on something that is, like, you know, because if you write something that's autobiographical or semi-autobiographical, it is like it's or something that's totally, you know, miles from who you are. But it takes such a lot of work to get, first of all, to, like, get an idea on the page, and then you send a one pager, and then someone's like, maybe I'll look at a treatment. And you're like, oh, okay, well, I'll send a treatment. And then they're like, okay, fine, write a script. And you're like, okay, I've written one script. And then it's like, oh, okay, we might shoot 10 minutes of this script. And then, oh, okay, write 6 scripts, and then we'll let you know when we've read all of them if we're going to shoot them. It's such a long...
And then you hand them in, and they're like, okay, so she's gone away for a 6-week holiday, Mauritius, so she's going to read when she gets back. And you're like...
Yeah. you know, people, like, are pregnant.
Yeah. So everyone's always pregnant.
Everyone's always on maternity leave. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that women can't go on maternity leave. They absolutely can. But it always seems to me that as soon as someone's like, I love your idea, I'm going to have 6 children on the bounce, and then let me tell you, in 9 years, me and you, we're going to make this baby.
Yeah, like... yeah. When the quadruplets go to uni, I'll finally, you know. No, it's so funny,
I'm casting my granddaughter as me.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say that, because maybe this is good for, like, you know, people who want to write for TV to hear. Like, that was the exact process with Newark. It's been, I think, the very first iteration of the show got optioned by the production company who were making it, Balloon Entertainment, 5 or 6 years ago. It's been, like, a long...
Wow, that's a long time.
Oh, a long old journey. And that's what's been nice about the show, is that, like, Leslie and Maxine, the mum and the son characters, like, they've been the mainstays of all of those. The show's gone through so many different iterations, and the characters have been different ages, and the setting's been slightly different, and but they've always remained really true. And that core relationship is, like, very much based on me and my real-life mum.
And so we've got, like, loads of international listeners. So can you sort of sum up Newark?
Oh, yeah.
Which is your hometown.
Newark upon Trent, baby. Newark is, like, I always say it's, like, a small working class market town in the East Midlands. So it's, like, in Nottinghamshire.
Yep.
It's, like, sort of between Nottingham and Lincoln, really.
And when you say a market town, I know that you mean that once upon a time it would have been, like, a trading mm-hmm. market town. So that would be, I'm just trying to, like, paint a picture for people that might have never been to a market town in the UK, in which case, guys, you've really got to get there.
Yeah, you're missing out, guys.
But like, I'm thinking cobbled streets in some points. There'd be, like, maybe a big sort of, I was about to say lace market, but, like, corn exchange or something like that.
Yeah.
That's, like, a big old building where once upon a time people would have gone, I'll give you this cow if you give me that.
Yeah. The old cow for beds.
You know, the old cow, which again is a sitcom that I'm working on.
Yes. No, that's actually pretty bang on. And Newark is an interesting one because, as people will see when they watch the show, no, it's how I said when, not if.
When they watch the show.
It's actually a very beautiful town. It's really beautiful. It is, like, it's very, like, cobblestoned and very pretty, and a lot of, like, original kind of, like, Tudor architecture. It's very pretty, and there is, like, something like a corn exchange. And so it's really visually beautiful, but it's also, like, there's not a lot of money in the town. It's kind of like this little forgotten corner of the East Midlands. I mean, the East Midlands in general is, like, a weirdly underserved part of the country, I think. Like, just... even in terms of just like media representation, like when whenever I develop shows and I want to, you know, set shows set in the East Midlands, people are always very excited by that, because it's like, you know, the West Midlands people know Birmingham, yes, and stuff, and people know Manchester and Liverpool and they know Bristol and London, but it's kind of this like weird fallow part of the country. Like I always say, I grew up in Newark. I lived there till I was 18. I felt like I grew up on like an island in the middle of the ocean. Do you know what I mean? It was like, I felt so far away from everything. It really, you're about as like slap bang in the middle of England as you can be. And it just feels like you're not, you do have this weird identity crisis growing up as like a Midlander, particularly an East Midlander, because people are like, where's that? You know, people don't know what it is. Like, you know, and yeah, so it's a funny town, and my relationship with it has really morphed over the years, because growing up there as a teenager, I think a lot of people who grew up in like small towns, I was like, this place is shit, you know, like whatever, fucking hate it. And I have I do have a complicated relationship with it, but now I can slightly more appreciate, like, it's very beautiful. It's like, it's, and as I say, really underserved. Like, it's, it was a few years ago, you know, the government do like a social mobility commission, like every year they do that, I'm not sure, but in like, I think it was like the 2017 social mobility commission, knew out of all of the towns in I think Great Britain, Newark was the second worst in the whole of Great Britain for social mobility. So it's like the schools aren't great, and it's kind of, I know that like Nottinghamshire County Council, like they're trying to like revive Newark and I've been getting asked about that a lot in interviews and stuff. People are like, are you hoping this will like, but you know, like help Newark and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh God, I don't know. I'm just trying to make a silly TV show, you know.
It's a lot of pressure, isn't
it? Yeah. To like suddenly become like the poster boy of like the regeneration of a town. But it'd be amazing if that did happen, because I feel very fondly towards the town, you know.
I did read an article of you. Is it like the Newark Observer?
The Newark Advertiser.
I'm so sorry if the editor's listening,
please,
I'm sure he's a huge fan of the show. It feels like this town's quite proud that the show's been shot there and that you're from there and that you're celebrating their home.
Well, yeah, they've not fucking seen it yet. That's the thing. It's like they're proud in both senses of the word. Like they're very proud of me and excited that a show's being made there. But it's also just like a very proud town. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And if anyone from Newark is listening, hi, I love you. But yeah, it's representing a whole town, and it's my fault. I called the show Newark just because I thought the pun was funny. Like it sounded like New York. But I hope people like it, and I hope they feel represented. But also, it's like, you can't represent everyone. Do you know what I mean? I can't represent all young gay boys. I can't represent queer people. I can't represent all people from one town.
Yeah.
You've seen a bit of it now. It's quite a specific story about a specific family, and I hope that people are able to find the universality within that.
But I think that's all we can do as people that tell stories, and it's certainly what I try and do. Sort of, I think it's quite hard if you're a queer person in the media, in that sometimes people do want you to be all things. And I think all you can really do is tell your story and hope that people find moments where they align. Do you know what I mean? Moments where they go, oh, okay, yeah, that moment resonates for me.
Totally.
And the rest of it I can just really enjoy, which I'm sure it will. So let's talk about, I know that it's sort of semi-autobiographical, but let's talk about you as a young person in Newark. What were you like in sort of primary school, the beginning of secondary school? Were you, because I'm assuming that you were quite fun, quite cheeky.
Oh, that's
maybe
nice.
Like the teachers would have liked you. quite studious, but in a fun way.
Oh my God. I was about to say that's really bang on. That sounds like I've given myself a huge compliment. But yeah, I was. That's pretty much it. I was definitely primary school. I loved primary school. I loved it. I had a great time. I was a show off, you know. I was a little. You've heard of them.
I know them. Look in the mirror.
I was very, I was always like a joy to have in class. You know, I was that kid.
Sure.
I was very interested in drama and music, and I loved school. I was a really like happy kid. I was always, like, I was just like a sort of happy-go-lucky kid, and then so I had a lovely time at primary school. Was liked, was popular. And then secondary school, like, thing, I think, as is the case for a lot of people, if you're just a little bit different, I suppose, secondary school is where things took a bit of a nosedive, and that wasn't as fun, which, you know, I went to I won't name any names, but I went to a secondary school in Newark for a year, and then I've got so lame that I got so badly bullied that I had to leave. So
it's not lame because it's not your fault.
Yeah, sure.
You know what I mean? Lame sort of suggests that there's like, that you had something to do with that. Sure. Do you know what I mean? Like but that's horrid. Yeah. That must have been really awful.
It was bad because, and I think, yeah, the reason I almost get embarrassed talking about it because I so don't like to think of myself as a victim. And I was such a little, like, I was such a target for bullying. Do you know what I mean? I was like chubby and like gay and a bit odd and just like effeminate. And I've always been very like legibly queer even before I like came out as gay. So I think I was just never going to stand a chance. And in retrospect, I should have never really gone to this particular school in Newark because it just had a reputation for being pretty bad. But I had really busy, like, working class parents who were just like, we don't have time to be driving you out of Newark, and like the school bus is expensive. But then I think because I had such a rough time at that school, I moved and went to a different secondary school outside of Newark. And I think my mum was just like, okay, it's worth it. Like, we'll just... So they paid for me to... it was still like a normal, like, just comprehensive school, but they would like pay for me to get the bus there and stuff, which, you know, was expensive for my parents, you know. I'm so glad they did that, because I would have had the worst time if I'd stayed at that school.
And so did you find like your people, did you find like a gang of mates when you went to your new school? Was it more, I don't know, were people more sort of open-minded, or were there more people like you?
Yeah, there were. You know what, it's really interesting, because I've obviously been thinking about this because I knew I was doing this, and it's interesting, when I started that new secondary school, I weirdly, for the first time, and this didn't really last, but for the first time ever, I had like male friends.
Right,
as in,
yeah,
like, I made a group, God love them. I mean, I doubt they listen. I doubt they remember I existed. But like, I made friends with this group of boys who were like...
Lads.
No, nerds.
Oh, like, nerds.
Like, they were such little goobers, and they were like, they were like sub in between a level boys. They were like the absolute, they weren't even cool enough to be those boys, you know? And they kind of, and it's funny now because I shouldn't be disparaging about them, because actually they were incredibly kind to me, and I was like the new boy in school, and they kind of took me under their wing, and yeah, so we were friends for a while. None of them were gay, and maybe they didn't really know I was gay or whatever. And then when I started doing like, GCSE drama, that's when I found my gang, I think. And we had this, it's funny actually, because I was thinking about this, I was like, oh, I suppose it's quite unique. But like, for whatever reason, in my like shitty little comprehensive school, it was like, there was like a gang of queers, like inexplicably, like, yeah, like, yeah, yeah, like a weird, like, kind of, I don't know if you, how old were you when you came out? I should know this.
No, you shouldn't. I was 21, so okay. I'd already moved to London, and I already had like a group of friends, and there weren't actually any queer people in that friendship group, but I'm still like best friends with a couple of them now. But I just sort of knew that they would still like me.
Yeah.
Because we were all grown ups, and we were all at drama school. So it was a slightly different thing. And I was had a bit of distance from my family, which I think was useful for me in that moment.
Yeah, totally. And you're from Portsmouth, aren't you?
Yeah, Pompey.
Yeah. So I don't know if you had this at the school that you went to, but do you have any of those kids that like, these like magic resilient kids that somehow were out at about the age of like 13 and you're like, what?
Yeah, I've got friends that were those people.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how?
Yeah, yeah. They were just so at my school, there was, and it happened to coincide with the drama group, just because I think drama like hoovers up all of the freaks, you know, because it's like you can just be whoever you want to be, really. And there was this group of like really like queer or like queer like ally, this like amazing group of kids who all seemed to be out from about the age of 12 or 13. And I remember kind of spotting them on my first couple of years at the school. And it was the sort of thing where there was maybe a natural rejection of them from me, because I was like, I think I'm a bit like that, but I don't want to be associated with them because then people will know I'm gay.
Yeah.
But they did drama. So eventually our worlds ended up colliding because we all took GCSE drama together. And it was like, and it was a mixture. It was like queer girls and queer boys, and like, and everyone was kind of like quite gender fluidy. Like it was just like a cool group of like lovely freaks who I sometimes think, like, would we have all been friends were we not queer? Probably not. Like, it was just like a force outside of ourselves that brought us together. And they kind of took me under their wing in a very, very kind way, because for my first like 6 months of being friends with them, I wasn't out either. And I think they were just like, oh, honey, come on in and we'll wait. And then I came out and I had these lovely gay friends, and it was sort of really special and rare for the kind of school that I went to, because it wasn't a very progressive, like, forward-thinking school. It was, like, just a working-class comp, you know? Yeah. But it was really special.
That is really special. When would that have been? How old are you?
I'm 29, so that would have been around, like, 2007, 2008, yeah, around there. And it was...
So it's not this new wave that we're getting now, which is so exciting and liberating. Like, occasionally people get in touch with me and say, would you come and speak at our school's LGBT society? And I'm like, I just love that your school has an LGBT society. Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. That is fantastic.
Yeah, totally. It's like, I have a bunch of nephews. I have five nephews and they're all, like, at school now, and it's sort of amazing, you know, them. They tell me about their friends. Like, my nephew was telling me, my oldest nephew goes to the school that I went to that I got bullied out of.
Oh, wow.
And he was telling me, like, that there was... someone in his year who changed to they them pronouns, and I was like, oh my god, like, I just had, like, a sort of, like, limp wrist, and I got, like, I got bullied out of there. So it's sort of amazing how much, even in those corners of the UK, like, things are changing. But yeah, I had this amazing sort of gang, and we all kind of, like, it really changed my life, actually, like, being friends with those people, because it was really liberating. And we were very different, but and it was drama that brought us together, really, which is so embarrassing. But, you know, they were a really lovely gang. I really feel very fondly towards all of them.
I think just seeing someone who feels like you is so reassuring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were some, when I was younger, when I was at school, there were a couple of gay guys or guys that I assumed might come out later, who did, that I was friends with. But I think I always sort of wanted to be near them, just because I was like, well, I want to be in the sort of vicinity of someone that's sort of toying with coming out.
Yes.
Because their bravery might rub off on me.
Oh my god, yes, totally. You want to be in their orbit. That's exactly how I felt. There was this one particular boy called Oscar. He might listen to this, he's an actor now. I felt that he was the most confident child I ever met. I mean, he was sort of like a cartoon of, like, a precocious child. Like, yeah. he was sort of amazing. He was so brave, and he was one of those that was out from when he was in, like, year eight or something insane like that. And everyone liked him, and I don't think he got that much shit. There was just something a very, like, nourishing and, like, empowering about being around him. And we were sort of, like, circling each other for a while, and I was like, And as I say, when I first met him, I was like, oh God, no, Oscar's way too much. Do you know what I mean? Because I recognise myself in him, you know? And then we became friends, and it was a really... And we still sometimes keep in touch, and it was a really, you know, special friendship. And we were both, like, the little, you know, drama boys, in the little gay drama boys. And we would write sketches together and do them in assembly. And, like, it was a very, like, special friendship. And we both went off to drama school, and... Yeah, I'm very grateful for that gang, even if we're not, like, as a part of each other's lives anymore. Like, it was very, like, formative for me to be part of that little gay gang.
It's just nice that it existed.
Mm.
And so you just said you went on to drama school.
I did, yeah.
After that. So did you, and we've spoken about this quite a lot on the show before, did you come to London for drama school?
I went to Guildford.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Where did you go?
I went to Aura, It feels like 100 years ago that I went. I'm so old now. But
I auditioned there. I loved Aura.
Yeah, it was really... So cool. I had such a great time there. It was such a... I think sort of what you're saying about your little gay gang at school, although it wasn't a little gay gang, it was a place where I could work out who I was. And it was a place where I, for the first time ever, I felt like I was good at something.
Oh my God, yeah.
Which is, like, so important, I think. Like, I obviously, like, outside of school, I had hobbies where I would do bits of drama and I'd do bits of acting and do dancing classes and things like that. But at drama school, I think, like, knowing that you'd been, like, chosen to go somewhere, ooh, it just felt really special to be like, oh, I'm good enough to be here, and all these other people, and we've all worked really hard to audition and be in this place. And so I think that, I guess, that push of confidence was also part of what took me towards, you know, accepting myself. But this podcast isn't about me.
I wish it was. I'm so fascinated.
Although you went to Guildford rather than London, was there part of you that was sort of thinking, I must leave Newark, I must get out, I need to be in a bigger place, I need to be in a different place?
For sure. Yeah. I was really, really chomping at the bit to leave. I think had I not got into drama school, and I was really lucky. I got a scholarship. It was why I was able to go. But like, had I not, I sort of don't know what I would have done, because I really did put all my eggs in one basket. And I was clever at school, and I could have. I remember the school sitting me down, and they were trying to encourage me to try and go and do English at Cambridge, and I really didn't want to, because I just had it in my head that I wanted to go to drama school, and I don't know what I would have done had I not got in, because I was so desperate to leave Newark. It wasn't a place built for like a boy like me to thrive, you know. And it might have changed now, and I hope that it has. And even being there recently shooting the show, I'm like, yeah, things feel different. It feels like the dial's moved slightly.
And are your family still there?
Most of my family are. My parents, actually, this is crazy, because my mum's lived there her entire life, but they actually just moved down south. They live in Devon now. They're doing like seasonal work. It's very sweet. They like warden together on caravan parks.
That is, I mean, that's another sitcom.
I know. I do think I'm like, God, I've got to stop milking my entire life, but I will write something about it. I think it's so sweet. And they're obsessed with each other. They love each other dearly. But yeah, so they move. But like my brother, like all of my like aunties, uncles, all of my cousins, all of like my nephews, they're all still there. So I saw a lot of family when I was there. And I think it is changing slightly, but I had to get out. My God, I was so excited to leave.
And did you leave at 18?
Yeah, I did. Same. I did. And it was like, I really, really specifically remember, like it's like a scene out of a film. I really remember like the car when my parents were moving me into uni halls, and the car like driving away from Newark, and just like, oh, going onto the A1, onto the motorway, and just seeing like Newark disappear in the background. Oh, God, I just got goosebumps thinking about it, because I was just like, I did it. Like, I got out, you know, like I managed it. And it was like it's like the proudest moment of my life is that I managed to. And you know, it's no shade on Newark at all. Like, plenty of people stay there and have a lovely time, but I just had to leave.
And were you out at this point?
Yes, I was. I came out when I was 16. Yeah. But 1,000% because I was friends with that group.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have, I think I probably would have just waited until I got to drama school had I not had that group. I came out, this is a thread from Newark that's sort of autobiographical as well, is that, you know, that really long summer you have between your GCSEs and your A-levels, you get that like weird 3-month summer. In that summer, I remember being like, well, I'm going back to sixth form after this. And I was just sort of bored. I was like, well, I might as well. And I had all these gay friends. I was like, might as well try and squeeze some drama out of this. So I came out in that summer, and with the help of those friends. And so I was like out. I mean, I was such a little like virgin loser. Like, it wasn't like I was like hooking and fucking and sucking. Like, I was just like an absolute loser. But yeah, I was out, and I'm so glad I went to drama school when I was out. So did you, obviously you went through drama school still in the in the closet?
I came out in the second year. So I was 20. I came out in the second year of drama school.
Right.
I actually, when I went to drama school, I had a boyfriend. I mean, listen.
You did? Oh my God.
Between year one and year two, there was a real shift.
Oh my God, I love it. I'm guessing you went to drama school like there were other queer people in your year.
Do you know, there weren't that many. And there were no, I think there was one queer girl who wasn't really in my friendship group. And then there was one guy who was out, and another guy that was showing signs.
Sure, yeah. Exhibiting the signs, yeah. Yeah.
And he came out much later.
Yeah.
To no one's surprise.
Yeah.
But, you know, of course, he had to take his own time to do it as well. Yeah, I don't think that it was... I worked in a bar, and there was a girl that worked in the bar that was gay that was very comfortable with herself.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Because I knew that they were gay. I knew that they were happy gay men. I knew that gay men existed. Yeah. I knew they were happy. But I thought, and I think I've probably said this before, but I remember thinking, like, I guess there's like 20 lesbians.
Yeah.
Like, because there is such a lack of representation on the television. And I think it's getting better, but ever so slowly. And there's always been so much more male gay voices, which is important and need to be there. I would just love some women's voices to be there as well, queer women's voices. But I knew that people like Graham Norton exist.
Yeah.
And I knew that there was this sort of fun jolliness to being a gay man.
Yes, totally.
And I'd never seen... I think that's why I'm so in love with stand-up, because I love being a funny gay woman in the way that I watched funny gay men,
yes,
like Paul O'Grady. And I was sort of obsessed with men like that. And so I think I met this gay girl that worked in a pub who I ended up having like a bit of a fling with.
Oh, I love it.
Imagine. And just thinking she was, you know, she managed a bar and she was happy and she was, I think her family was sort of fine with it. It just wasn't sad.
Yeah.
And I guess I had been I basically thought that if you were a lesbian, you had to be like really posh. Because that's because of Claire Boarding and Sandy Toksvig. I was like, well, my dad just had his tooth kicked out by a horse. So I guess we don't fall into that category.
Totally.
But yeah, I think seeing people that are like, and I guess it's why I do this podcast, because I seeing people that are happy and gay, I think is so important. And, you know, not just gay, you know, every element of the LGBTQIA plus rainbow spectrum, whatever you want to call it. I think seeing people that are thriving.
Oh my God, it's crucial.
It's crucial. And it's like your lifeblood.
Yeah.
When you're like trying to, it's like the air when you're like, because it feels like, for me, like when I wasn't out, like swimming, like, oh God, I'm going to have to get up for air in a minute. I don't know how I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm.
I know exactly what you mean. I think I've always felt like that as well, because I do just identify as like quite a happy, sound, like, you know, settled gay person. I've always really felt the call to like really make that very open and clear, because it's like, there are beautiful pieces of like queer art about like suffering and trauma. And those are totally valid. And I've enjoyed many of them. But also it's like queer joy is just really, really important, because I had the same thing as you as growing up. I just didn't think there was such a thing as having like a happy life as a gay person. Yeah. I just didn't think that was something that was like available to me. And I think maybe being working class is
To ask, do you think that the work, like being working class and being from that sort of, you know, as you said before, that town that sort of felt like the country forgot.
Yeah.
Like, do you think that was like an added thing on top of your sort of queerness?
I think so. Yeah, I really think so. And I say all of this fully in the knowledge that like it was my like little teenage judgmental like rat in my brain thinking all of this, but it was like, I remember thinking like, I don't want to be like some like small town gay. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to be like, because the only sort of representation I'd seen is like sad. don't want to be
like Little Britain.
Yes, exactly. I don't want to be some tragic figure. Yeah. I think that's what I thought, because I was a really happy kid. And I think I was like, well, if it means I have to have like a sad, chaotic life, then I don't want it.
Whereas if there was like a gay character that was really happy in like, you know, I'm not saying that a sitcom should have had it, but if there was that in, you know, a classic family British sitcom where you're like, oh, and then there's just two gay guys and they're happy and they have this sort of nice life and everyone likes them.
Yeah.
It would have been like, oh, maybe it's not tragic to be a small town gay.
Totally.
But the only representation you're seeing is, you know, something that feels quite sad.
Well, exactly. And I remember the only time I'd seen like a working class gay person on TV. The only time I can remember seeing it was in Shameless. One of the brothers is gay in that. And I remember that sort of blew my mind. And obviously Shameless is like a very specific tone. I really loved that show growing up. But maybe it's in like the pilot or the second episode. There's like a gay sex scene. And it was the first time I'd ever seen gay. And obviously my eyes like bulged out my fucking head. That show really, it's tragic in its own way. And it's like he comes out and I suppose his family sort of accept him, actually, so maybe it was quite important for me to watch. I really loved it. I do remember that group of gays that I used to be friends with. The girls in that group. Did you ever used to watch that show Lip Service?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I loved it. So they turned me on to it. And I remember the genuine, unbridled, like, buzzing joy and excitement that they had, like, a show that they felt represented them. And they would, every week, they would watch it, and then we would come in and we would sit in the drama room and, like, discuss that week's episode. And it was, like, because, as you say, there was so little representation for queer women at the time. It was, like, the fact that there was, like, a gay show with, like, cool gay women, like, having sex with each other.
And
they were hot, and they were, like, had sex lives and jobs, cool city jobs, and, like, and it was...
sex life and a job?
Yeah, can
How
you believe
you
it?
She can have it all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I just remember like they were like buzzing about that show, and it's sort of one of the first times I remember like, oh yeah, representation's like huge, because it's like it's the only gay show they've ever watched apart from maybe like the L Word, but it was like Lip Service was British and like
The L Word always felt so, you know, I loved it at one point, but like it felt so like everyone was like unbelievably hot, like living in Hollywood. Everyone had like, it was like, oh, Shane hasn't got a lot of money. And then it's like, oh no, now she's going to become a hairdresser to the stars.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, okay, now she's really wealthy as well.
Yeah.
And just like living these, like, maybe it was that because it was really a hopeful example of what.
Well, it's aspirational, isn't it? You think like, I could be a, you know, whatever, a hairstylist to the stars.
Yeah,
exactly. Which is not how it panned out. But yeah, it's interesting. I think maybe the one thing that's stopped like gay representation kind of like penetrating my brain is because Because I was a chubby boy growing up, I was always really overweight. I was a really overweight teenager and child. I was a big baby. Like, I've always been big. And there was something about every gay man on TV, and still sort of, this is one of the only things, like, I'm very aware that, like, gay men are doing fine representation wise, like white gay men are doing grand, but there is still a slightly exhausting thing where I'm like, why is everyone like absolutely gorgeous with perfect bodies? And it's one of the things that I will say proud of about Newark is that we've got, like, just a normal, like, Jai, we will not mind me saying this, just like a normal size, like a normal sweet boy with a sweet round face. Like, he's so gorgeous and perfect that role, and really looks like I did as a teenager. And I'm so glad we've got that representation, because that would have been really important for me, because I think because I was so insecure in my body, and I, you know, it's so boring, but I developed an eating disorder at drama school, and I think that was like the manifestation of me trying to look like what I thought gay men should look like. So I was like, I'm at drama school now, I'm out, so it's time for me to actually start looking like a gay man should. So I lost like so much weight, and I wish...
Like, dramatic when people looked at you, they were like, oh wow, you've really changed.
Yeah,
really?
It was crazy. Yeah, I think, and so much of that was like tied up in like queerness and feeling. I was like, okay, I'm out, but I feel incredibly asexual. I feel really desexualized.
Yes.
Because I'd only ever seen like gorgeous, like Adonis... Yes. men on TV, and I was like, well, I know I'm not that. So I was like, well, my only other option is to probably just get really thin, because I knew, you know, I just knew, like, straight, but, you know, like twinkie, I was like, maybe I'll try and look like that. And I lost, I mean, just an absurd amount of weight when I was at drama school, very, very quickly as well. And it was, at the time, I wasn't like, I have an eating disorder. It was only like in retrospect that I look back at it now and I'm like, oh wow, I really wasn't very well at the time.
That must have been exhausting though, because drama school was knackering for me, and I was eating everything. Yeah. I actually went through a chubby phase while I was there.
Oh my god, you did!
Yeah.
Congrats.
But I mean, don't get me wrong, nurses have it harder. But I will say, when you're at drama school, you do sort of have. It's like for us, we had to like get there at 8. Have like, or 8:30, I think we used to have limbering, whatever that was, for half an hour.
Yeah.
Where you basically just had to be on campus and
sort of stretch. Exactly. Yeah.
Stretch and like make sure you had like your plays in your bag.
Yeah.
And then it was the whole day. You'd have an hour for lunch, but it was all the way until 6. It wasn't like uni where you like pop in for a lecture if you can be bothered. Ours was full on. Was yours the same?
Yes, very much so. And
so you must be knackered.
I was really exhausted, and I think because you're burning so much energy at drama school, it's so like frenetic and mad and like kinetic. And I basically had about maybe like two years where I sort of just didn't eat. Like, I just stopped eating, and I would skip meals and stuff like that. And I lost a lot of weight very, because I saw results very quickly. So I was like, oh, amazing. I'll just keep going with this. And that I had a bit of a rough time at drama school. I didn't love it. And it was the first time I got really praised by teachers and stuff like that, because they were like, Nathan, you look incredible. And I just kept going and going and going, to the point where eventually, like, my best friends at the time that I was living with were like, you've got to stop. I remember there was one very good teacher who pulled me aside and was like, I know you've been trying to lose weight, and well done if that's what you wanted to do, but you shouldn't lose anymore, I don't think. At the time, I was like, I felt very embarrassed by that, because I was like, well, I'm not thin, so everyone's like losing that. And looking back on it, I was really tiny. I old photos now, I sort of don't look at them anymore, because it makes me kind of sad, because I think I just look at him and I'm like, oh god, I wish someone could just tell him, like, you'll be fine. And like, I don't know what I want to say to my old self. I just want him to eat a meal.
Yeah.
You know, but it's not like that's like queer culture's fault necessarily, but it did feel weirdly tied up in me just trying to look like what I thought an attractive gay man looked like, you know?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. And I think that's something, obviously there has been a lot of representation of gay men, which is fantastic. But, you know, I also know from gay male friends that have said, like, they felt they maybe couldn't be as naturally camp as they wanted to be, because that was something that was always sent up on television.
Yeah.
Or if they were camp, there would be other gay men that were like, I don't go for camp guys.
Yeah.
You know, all of that sort of, those sort of power plays within the gay community, which I'm sure does happen within lesbian communities. But I think because we've never had like lesbian spaces in the same way of like gay male spaces, like, you know, clubs where you might wear, I don't know, a harness.
Yeah.
You know, with the because there's just never been that. Because I mean, I don't know why. A sweeping generalization, maybe because some of us have settled down.
Well, I think it's also you're maybe not like just under the male gaze at all. So no one's being like, wouldn't it be good if you made your body smaller? Do you know what I mean? It's like you don't have that weird like male pressure.
Yeah, and I'm sure. No, I mean, I'm sure
it does exist.
Yeah,
but...
of course. And I'm sure there'll be lesbians listening thinking, oh, well, you know, or I felt like that. Or certainly I think that a sort of a lesbian spin on it might be women that are butch and like being butch and want to be butch, and there's just no butch girls on TV.
Or there might be
people that are non-binary, that are more sort of male presenting or traditionally male presenting. You know, what we assume a gay person should look like can be really claustrophobic.
Yeah.
It can really box you in. And now obviously we haven't even had a chance to talk about the fact that you're in this new pirate comedy.
Oh my God.
I mean, it feels very exciting. It's a HBO Max show.
Hey, yeah. I mean, it's sort of the craziest thing that's ever.
Did you have to go to America? And like,
yeah, I did. I filmed in LA.
Oh my God.
Like
America.
Yeah, America. You've heard of it? Yeah.
Oh my God, you've been there. And was it great fun?
It was. It was loads of fun. It's like, because I didn't enjoy drama school really and had a bit of a weird time there, I kind of really like turned my back on acting. No one cares. Back on literally what, like nothing. But I said I wasn't going to act anymore. I didn't want to do it anymore. And then because I started making the Twitter videos that you very kind of mentioned earlier.
Is that where it's all come from?
Yeah, baby. Yeah.
Because I was like, I wish I was funnier in moments on the internet.
I mean, it's truly not a skill anyone should hone, really. It's so stupid. But I started making those videos and it was never with the, this might sound overly modest, but I was not doing it to get discovered. Like I really was just putting those videos online because I thought they were funny. Like I didn't have an acting agent.
Really,
I wasn't
funny.
I just wanted to be a comedy writer. And then so Taika Waititi directed the pilot of the show and he's an exec producer on it. And when they were casting, I think my American writing agents kind of got in touch with me and they were like, we've got a self-tape for this. Do you want to audition for this Taika Waititi show? And I was like, I mean, yeah, okay.
Yeah,
like
sure.
I was like, yeah, I'll give it a go. And I got it, which is sort of the luckiest thing that's ever happened to me, really.
Oh, no, it's not lucky. You're really funny.
Thanks, mate. I really had a nice time doing it. And it was actually great because I was a little bit worried about going to act because I was like, I'm going to start thinking about the way that I look again. I'm going to really start caring about all of that. And the great, I got to play gay in that show. I'm gay in it and I have a relationship and no one ever made me feel weird about the way that I look. I was like, you know, it's Hollywood, whatever. I think I had like a monstrous image of what it might be in my head. And I had a great time and I really enjoyed it. And I think the show's good and I hope people like it. You know, it was a really cool experience. And I feel very, when you get to a certain point in your 20s where you feel like you just like dropped into yourself a little bit. I feel like I've had that in the past couple of years, which is nice.
That's great.
Oh.
Well, that brings us to the final question of the show.
Go.
You've listened to the show, so you know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking about that version of Nathan that was maybe when you met Oscar at school, but you were like, I'm not like him. I don't want anyone to know that I'm like him.
Yeah, yeah.
And you were dealing with that. If you could reach out to that guy and say something or give him some words of encouragement or someone that's listening at home that is feeling similar, what would you say?
I think I would say keep going because there were times where I felt like, oh, what's the point in this? Life seems so hard. But I would say keep going. Don't let anyone like dim your light. I think I've always been really blessed with like a kind of unshakable like inner confidence, and I would say really hold on to that because that's special. Not everyone is that privileged. I'd say be easier on your parents. Maybe they're really trying their best. And I would say you're honestly gonna be fine and you're gonna lead such a nice life, like such a nice, good, happy, joyful, fulfilling life. And even though that might feel so out of your reach right now, you're going to have the best time and you're going to become a really rounded, happy person. And that might not feel within your grasp right now, but it definitely is.
That's perfect. Absolutely perfect. And by the way, I hope that you know, like, you look great now.
Oh, thanks, mate. That's really nice.
But I think the reason that you look great is because you're happy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you radiate happiness and joyfulness and you can't help but look great.
Oh, that's such an incredibly kind thing to say. I really appreciate
it. I think it's
true.
Oh,
thanks mate.
There we are. I loved that chat. I really hope you did too. As ever, if you want to get in touch with me, you can. The email is hello@outwithsusieruffle.com. I always want to hear from you. And until next week, bye-bye.